And I want to express not only my personal appreciation, but the appreciation of Sierra Club, and actually, while I can't speak for them, I know the other environmental groups involved with this, for all the work that the Claremont Canyon Conservancy has done in Claremont Canyon, particularly with the tremendous effort to restore the native habitat that we have lost and now we're trying to regain. The 1991 fire, out of that came a decision about what to do to protect against future fires. And I want to talk a little bit about that, because what the Sierra Club put together and what we've handed out and put on everybody's chair is what we call the Sierra Club's three R's for how to deal with that. Remove, restore, and reestablish. And I was involved very much with that back in the 1990s. We met at the Temesco Clubhouse of the Park District with fire officials and others, environmental groups, California Native Plant Society, Golden Gate Audubon Society, members of the Claremont Canyon Conservancy, and worked together to try to figure out what was the best approach. And, you know, I know there's people out there who've seen it who say, oh, you shouldn't cut down any tree at all. Well, the fact of the matter is, and I think we all know in this room, that the eucalyptus, blue gum eucalyptus in particular, and the massive amounts of monoculture plantations of blue gum eucalyptus are a fire dangerous tree in this environment. There's no question about that. And some people may still want to deny that, like climate change deniers. And so the issue is, what do we do in these particular areas that are fire dangerous? I like eucalyptus. I actually like their smell. My wife hates it, but I like the smell. It's an ornamental tree. It can be planted and beautiful in many locations, but in particular locations in the East Bay, it is not an appropriate tree, along with the Monterey pine and acacia, to be on the ridgetops and in areas that are considered the most fire dangerous areas when we have the Diablo winds. That's a fact. So what are you going to do? Well, one approach said, well, we just thin them, you know, like the foresters say, we just thin them. Well, the problem with thinning eucalyptus in this environment is that you just don't cut out a few trees on a few acres. You have to cut the trees out, and then what you have to do is you have to remove entirely, folks, the entire understory of native habitat. All the oaks, bays, everything else has got to go. And that's because you cannot have the fire ladder that will go up the eucalyptus and create the torching that creates the kinds of fire danger that we have. And in our brochure, we have a nice little picture of what Caltrans has done for that approach, which shows you the lovely bare and barren ground underneath the thin eucalyptus as their approach to this problem. And that, frankly, is ecologically unsound and environmentally wrong. So what do you do? Plus, what you have to do is, this is not a program where you just do it for a few years and go away. This is in perpetuity. Every year for 50 to 100 years. The cost is enormous. We've costed that out. For example, on the Park District lands, to do on the Park District property, you would have to spend close to, over the next 30 years, 30 to 50 years, $150 to $200 million to do a thinning program with the clearing out periodically, and with the fact that you're going to have to remove the large eucalyptus when they die in 120 years at $3,000 a tree in current dollars. That is fiscally unsustainable. No public agency can afford that. And having served on a city council, I know what happens when city councils can't afford to do things. You just don't do it. And that leaves the problem back to square one, another great fire. So the Sierra Club, California Native Plant Society, Golden Gate Audubon Society, all put together what we call the three R's. You remove the eucalyptus, Monterey pine, and acacia in certain low areas. And what you do is you allow the understory of native oaks, bays, and woodlands to return. Okay? And over time, they take over, and you don't have the same kind of maintenance costs. You have virtually no maintenance costs in the future years. You have a climax oak, bay, woodland forest in those particular areas, or a grassland, native grassland. And you have none of the cost of perpetual maintenance that you have with the thinning program. Moreover, the existing areas are considered wild whipsnake habitat and endangered species. And you have, according to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, you have to mitigate by providing whipsnake, create whipsnake habitat. Whipsnakes do not live in eucalyptus. Okay? So what has to be done? You have to create that habitat. And what the 3Rs says is by restoring the native habitat, you restore the whipsnake habitat. You put the whipsnake, an endangered species, on the endangered species list, just like our friends the grizzly bear and the wolf and all those other wonderful little cuddly creatures we like to think about. You put that, you will have it on a recovery plan. That is ecologically sound. That is environmentally sound. That is environmentally right. And from a fiscal standpoint, this is the most fiscally sustainable and responsible approach to take, because it does not require the kinds of perpetual costs to public agencies that we know public agencies cannot afford to carry out in perpetuity. Now, that's the 3R program. Now, part of that program, because it does include it, is to deal with the use of herbicides. And I want to talk about that briefly, because there's been a lot of talk about, you know, notions about this aerial spraying of herbicides, as if Monsanto's going to come in with airplanes and spray everything. That's not what happens. You come out with very concentrated, a very careful program of painting or spraying around the Cambrian layer of the eucalyptus. You may have to do that more than once over a period of time. Ultimately, the eucalyptus sprouts die, the suckers. There's usually 20 or 30 that come out from a euc. And there's no other way to do that cost effectively. Okay? And now there's been talk about that, oh, well, you know, who has said that glyphosate, which is used on Scotch and French broom, it causes cancer. All right. I don't know whether that's true or not, because the European Union scientists just came out and said they disagree with that. I'm not going to take a position on that one way or the other. All I can say is this. Radiation causes cancer. People get radiation treatment for cancers. All right? You don't say to them, we're going to ban the use of radiation treatment because radiation causes cancer. I see a lot of people in this room of a particular age, I won't embarrass you, who probably do take or know people who take Coumadin as a blood thinner for their heart conditions. Okay. Coumadin is rat poison. It's warfarin. That's what it was created for originally. Why do I bring this up? Because when you talk about what causes cancer and how to deal with these things, you have to look at what the dosage is, what the method and application is, the exposure, all those things go together. You would not say to somebody, you cannot take Coumadin, you're going to ban Coumadin because it's a rat poison and it can kill you. The person would say, wait a minute, I'm taking it because it's a blood thinner. I'm surviving because of that. You would not say to somebody on radiation treatment for a cancer, you can't do that because radiation causes cancer. It's a different dosage, it's a different application, a different method of dealing with it. And that's what goes on here with these particular herbicides. And in fact, the Nature Conservancy, when it bought and restored Jepson Prairie out on the Delta, up towards Sacramento, what did they use to help restore that? Glyphosate to deal with the exotics. State Parks, when it removed the eucs at Angel Island, used garlon on the tree stumps. Okay? The wildlife has returned. When it's used in a proper application, as it should be, with careful controls and mitigations, it's safe. So let's put aside that issue about herbicides as one of those inflammatory, emotional issues that can get people crazy, and deal with it in a scientific and careful manner that it should be done. And by the way, who recently declared, you may have seen this, that red meat causes cancer. So if people want to ban glyphosate, then they better ban red meat. So let me end by saying this. I was running for city council in 1991. I actually saw all the stuff coming down that October when I was walking precincts. And so I got on my city council in El Cerrito. Our fire chief, and apparatus were sent to fight the fire. We had a briefing afterwards by the fire chief. And why this has become so an important issue for me is because when we had that briefing, not only from the environmental perspective, but from the fire safety perspective, he talked about three things that I've always kept in my mind. First, he said, you know that in the city of Alameda, they reported hot eucalyptus embers falling to the ground. Okay? We know from Australia, hot eucalyptus embers can go 30 kilometers. We know that actually in some cases, people thought they were putting setting up backfires when they later realized those were actually fires caused by the hot embers from the burning fire in front of them. Okay, that's how dangerous this can be. The other little factoid here, or fact, I mean, said was, if the fire had shifted just a little bit in terms of the wind, that fire would have swept through the hills towards the UC campus. And he said, we probably could have gotten most of the people out, okay? But there was no way we were going to get any of the libraries out, any of the buildings evacuated, of the experiments and everything else in them. They would have burned. That's how dangerous this fire was. The last little point he made was, and it's pertinent because we're here in the Claremont Hotel. The line that they fought with was at the Claremont Hotel. As he said, he told me, if this hotel caught fire, that was it. They were going to evacuate whole areas of Berkeley and Oakland. They're going to probably evacuate at least to Bancroft in Berkeley, at least to Telegraph Avenue to the west, and at least to Grand or MacArthur Avenue in Oakland. Everybody would have to leave. He said, we would not even bother trying to save anything in that area. We were going to build a fire line in that perimeter because there was no way you're going to stop a fire like that once this building, all wood, burst into flames. So this is why this is an important issue. It's a fire issue. It's an environmental issue. You want to do what's environmentally sound. And it's an issue that concerns fiscal sustainability and responsibility. That's why the Sierra Club, Golden Gate Audubon Society, California Native Plant Society have all come together to put together what's called the 3R program. Thank you.
And thank you for sort of clarifying some of the issues. My name's Marilyn Goldenhauberger, and myself and my husband, Matt, apparently we are the first founding sponsors of the Conservancy. Back in the day, like in 2001, we would meet in people's backyards and in living rooms, and we were trying to start this Conservancy, get the people together to try to dig deep and understand what it is like and what we should know and what we should do in living in the urban wildland interface. So this is basically what our organization has done. The day we signed up to be founding sponsors, another dozen people did also. And within the first year of our organization, at least another 100 families signed up.